And we have a thank you, Roger, and hello again, everybody. We greet you on this Tuesday, the 16th of March.
It's warm and dry where we are here in Studio 2 at the big W-shaped desk with the picture window kind of cloudy with the steam and a lot of rain.
We have a fire going in the fireplace, too. Well, we need it today.
What are we paying a cord for this wood? I saw a price this morning.
I don't know. I haven't seen the invoice yet.
$75 at some one place.
Is that right? For a cord of wood?
For a cord of wood, which isn't bad in New York City. It's $60 when you go up to Maine, would you believe that? Where it comes from.
All right. Well, so much for our problems.
Yes, so
we have other people here who have much more serious problems.
Moby,
because
raise and talk to you.
This is our public service feature. We like to call the Bob and Ray Beg Your Pardon Show. This is where we correct any minor errors in fact that may have crept into the stories reported on the air by our vast Bob and Ray news gathering organization. And we're aware that even the most trivial mistake in a news item may cause embarrassment to some individuals somewhere, and the innocent victims of our reporting errors deserve, we think, a public apology. And so today we've asked Mr. Otto Lardwood, or is it Lardwood?
Lardwood.
Lardwood of New Haven, Connecticut, to come into the studio at our expense, and we just want to say we're sorry, Mr. Lardwood.
Well, it's okay. I guess it'll all work out eventually.
Yes, I'm sure it will. We'd still like to tell our listeners about an erroneous statement we made that caused you some difficulty. We reported that federal agents had broken up a counterfeiting ring at 3128 Miramar Road in New Haven. And much to our regret, that wrong address turned out to be your home, Mr. Lardwood.
Well, don't feel too bad about it. Those things happen.
That's true, but it still might have caused you some embarrassment to have your home identified as the center of a counterfeiting ring. Did any problems result from our story on that?
Yes, in a way, but part of it was my own fault for taking $12,000 in cash out of the bank that morning to make a deposit on a new house. When the neighbors broke in and saw all that money, they assumed it was the counterfeit stuff, so they carried it away as a souvenir.
Well, we're terribly sorry, sir. I feel that we were at least partially responsible for the loss of your life savings to an unruly mob.
Well, don't be too hard on yourself. You're making it sound worse than it really is. I mean, I wasn't victimized by an unruly mob. Those people were my neighbors. Naturally, they broke into the house and took as much of my money as they wanted, since you said it was all counterfeit anyway.
Well, I'm really sorry. That must have been a terrible experience for you.
No, it wouldn't have been bad at all if I just stood by and let them tear up the house and take the money. But, I tried to explain what had happened, and that's when the neighbors beat me up pretty badly.
Oh, gee, I just don't know what to say.
You don't have to say anything. It's my own fault for trying to offer resistance. The only unfortunate part was that the police had heard your Bob and Ray broadcast, so when they came to investigate a fight at that address, they assumed I was the counterfeiter. That's how come the ambulance took me to the prison hospital.
Well, I certainly hope you're able to explain things there, at least.
No, not for about 6 weeks. My jaw had to be wired shut because the neighbors broke it, so I couldn't talk to tell anybody I was really the victim and not a criminal.
Well, this was a terrible series of events in your life that we set off, Mr. Lardwood.
No, come on, come on. I don't want you to feel that way about it. If I'd have put up a better fight, my jaw wouldn't have gotten broken, so it's all my own fault. Just tough luck that they brought me to trial while my jaw was still wired, and I couldn't explain what happened.
Do you mean that on top of all your other troubles, you were also brought to trial by mistake?
Well, actually, the jury didn't seem to think it was a mistake. See, the wrong address you'd given on your program made the rest of the evidence against me seem overwhelming. So I was convicted and sentenced to 10 years. I'm just out now pending my appeal.
Well, Mr. Lardwood, I had no idea what a tragic chain of events we started. And again, I want to say I feel awful.
Ah, forget it. That's life. You win some, you lose some.
Well, if there's anything at all we can do to make this up to you.
Well, I sure would like to get to Brazil before they put me in prison, but of course, I don't have any money left for the trip.
Oh, I think I see what you're hinting at, and I certainly won't be party to that little scheme of yours, but we do apologize for our original mistake.
Well, as I indicated, there's no need to apologize at this point. However,
well, it makes us feel better to get it off our conscience, sir. And I know you'll experience the same feeling after you've paid your debt to society. So just let me close now by inviting all of our listeners to join us again soon when we'll be offering a heartfelt apology for another of our spectacular Bob and Ray mistakes.
Next, Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. The story of America's favorite family of the Footlights and of their fight for security and happiness against the concrete heart of Broadway. Yesterday, as Calvin attempted to lead Mary, Harry, Pop, and himself through the maze of the streets of Milan toward their hotel, Mary became separated from the others. Now, moments later, they stand looking askance as Calvin speaks.
Well, I don't know. I think when we went down this alley here is when we lost her.
Well, that's where we made the right turn here,
yes,
Jimmy.
Yes, sir.
Well, we've retraced our way back here to this main street.
Has she ever done this before? I mean, you got lost,
yeah.
I remember.
Well, I had amnesia, you remember.
When, yeah.
After our...
Well, Mary's never suffered from amnesia.
No,
she didn't
no.
fall or get a hit in the head or anything.
She was with us just moments ago. Well, maybe 5 minutes ago, really. I know.
You don't suppose she'd have stopped off to eat, do you?
Well, I suppose that's an idea. She would have told us, seems to me. This would be the nearest restaurant right here, wouldn't it?
Yeah. It's,
why don't we go in with her? At least we can look around and see if we can see her. Oh, it's a very attractive place. Doing a good business, too, I think.
Yeah. Well, what do you know about this?
Ah. Huh.
Very fancy. Mm. They stopped the minute we came in.
They were all looking at us. But... Oh, no, I guess it's all right. They're going back to their meals.
Hey, we got good, good music, too.
Well, so long as we're here, I suppose we might as well eat.
Well, I think finding Mary is the most important thing. Say,
well, what? I don't see her anywhere.
Hey, I see somebody we know. Isn't that the tour bus driver over there? Maybe he's seen Mary. Maybe she went back to the bus.
Well, that's an idea. We can... sir?
Yes?
Do you remember us? I'm Harry Backstage. This is Calvin Hoogevin, our next-door neighbor.
Yes.
And Pop Beloved.
Hi.
Yeah.
Yes.
We've seemed to have lost my wife, Mary. We thought possibly she'd come in here to this restaurant.
Nice.
We took, I thought, I was here before, you know, deja vu. Have you ever heard of that?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that's what I thought. And made a right turn down an alley. We looked back, and Mary was gone. She probably had gone straight ahead.
Just disappeared like that. And we came back here.
That's nice.
Where we had seen her last. And there's no sign of her. That's why we thought she might have come in here.
What do you mean, that's nice? I don't think he understands what we're saying.
No, she didn't go back to the bus, did she?
Yes.
Oh, she did?
Oh,
well, now we know where she is. We can sit and eat and relax.
She's
on the bus somewhere.
Where is the... Look at that. They've all...
They're all trying to hear our conversation, I guess.
Yes, they want to know who we recommend, I guess. Well, if you want to eat, Calvin, I'll join you. I'm kind of hungry myself. Maybe Mary will think that we've gone into a restaurant and come looking for us herself.
I don't know, sir. We'll be a table
yes.
for three. Yeah. Would you get us a table for... Do you work here at the restaurant?
He does. He's the bus driver.
Yes.
Well, would you show us to a table for three, please?
Yes.
And so Harry, Calvin, and Pop find no trace of Mary in the restaurant. But perhaps they will tomorrow after they have their meal. And we'll hear Calvin say,
"No, no trace of her."
That's tomorrow in the next exciting episode of Mary Backstage, Noble Wife. Word Carr speaking.
And now it's time for another story of drama and tense emotion. A tale well designed to keep you in anxiety. And here with us again to set the stage for our latest thriller is the noted lecturer and world traveler, Commander Neville Putney. Commander, I assume or presume that you've reached into your amazing file and brought forth another tale, well designed to keep us all in anxiety.
Yes, quite so indeed, young man. Today's well-documented account centers around a young woman named Pamela Nordyke. She had married her husband, Cecil, a few years after his first wife mysteriously disappeared. The first Mrs. Nordyke was declared legally dead, even though her body was never found. In time, the mystery was all but forgotten, and Pamela never dreamed that it would one day bring her face to face with... anxiety. On the day our story begins, Pamela Nordyke was digging up the garden beside her home, preparing to plant cabbages. Her husband, Cecil, returned from work and appeared shocked at what he saw.
Pamela noticed the fear and anger on his face as she turned to greet him.
Why, Cecil, what's wrong? I noticed fear and anger on your face.
Pamela, what the devil are you doing digging in this garden? I intended to throw that shovel away before we were married.
Well, I found it out in the garage, and this patch of garden hasn't been used for several years, so I just decided to dig it up and plant cabbages.
I don't want you to plant cabbages here, Pamela. In fact, I want you to forget all about digging up this plot for a vegetable garden. Is that clear?
Well, it's clear enough, Cecil. But I can't understand why your hands are shaking and your face is turned ashen. Could it be something about this that reminds you of your first wife?
Yes, I'm afraid that's it, Pamela. I'm sorry if I shouted at you, but the first Mrs. Nordyke spent a great deal of her time gardening here, and, well, I guess the first sight of you doing the same thing gave me a start. Now, let me have that shovel so I can burn it.
You can't burn a steel shovel, and there are some other things about this that strike me as peculiar. I've spoken with the neighbors, and they said the first Mrs. Nordyke never took up gardening at all.
Pay no attention to neighborhood gossip, Pamela. I've told you I don't want this plot dug up to plant cabbages, and that's that.
You frighten me, waving that shovel around my head. I've never seen you like this before.
Well, that's only because you've never tried to plant cabbages here before. Now, let's go in the house and forget all about it.
Well, I'm not sure I can forget about it that easily, Cecil. After all, your first wife vanished from this house without a trace, and now you forbid me to dig up the garden for some reason.
Now, don't fill your head with silly ideas, Pamela. If you're so anxious to have a garden, I'll buy you a window box with flowers in it.
No, I'm afraid that won't do. Either I'm going to dig up this plot of ground right now, or I'm going to call the police to come and do it.
How about that for a bit of a story, young man?
Oh, boy, it really had my heart pounding there, Commander. Well, you can't just leave our audience in anxiety this way. Was it Pamela or the police who eventually found the first Mrs. Nordyke buried there in the garden?
Whatever gave you the notion she was buried in the garden? To the best of my knowledge, the good woman is still alive. It was discovered sometime later that she'd merely run off with a minor official of the Omaha Stockyards.
Well, That makes your whole story fall apart, Commander. Why would, Cecil get so upset about having Pamela dig in the garden if his first wife wasn't buried there?
Well, that's quite easily explained. He hated cabbage.
I see. And that's the whole story, huh? He just didn't like cabbage?
Well, many people don't, you know.
Yeah, but they don't have their stories like about not liking cabbage dramatized on radio, you know. Commander, I don't know how you have the nerve to come in here and try to palm off a clinker like that. I really don't.
Insolent young pup, that was an incredible story I brought forth from my amazing file.
Well, I didn't deny that it was incredible. I just said it was lousy.
Well, that'll be quite enough of your cheeky remarks. I'll move along to the closing announcement. Be quick about it.
Well, all right. I guess the quicker I get to it, the sooner we'll finish the whole fiasco. So, friends, be sure to join us next time when Commander Putney will again reach into his amazing file and bring forth a tale well-designed to keep you in anxiety. All right, now I think we can have a little of our Bob and Ray music. Flanagan and Allen. This is a one that you can all, along with us, recall pleasantly. Do you remember this one?
Tonight, diamonds dancing of her, music, maestro, please. Tonight I must forget how much I need her. Oh, Miss Tobita, pray. Your little dear melody, rest on, jest on, swing, any old thing that helps to ease the pain, that's all that you can bring. She used to like waltzes, so please don't play a waltz. She danced divinely, and I loved her so. But there I go, tonight I mustn't think of her. No more memories. Swing out, tonight I must forget. Music, maestro, please. A table near the bend, a small one. Some cigarettes, a glass, a tall one. And wait there, I could use a chaser for my blues. Tonight, I must think of her. Music, maestro, please. Tonight, tonight I must forget how much I need her. Oh, Mr. Leader, play your little melody. Red times, yes, I'm swing. And the old thing that helps to ease the pain, that's all that you can bring.
Then she used the light bulb. A little bit unbound, seemed so fireable. You remember her face. She danced inside me, and I loved her so.
But then I grow old tonight. I must think of her no more than memory. Swing out tonight, I must forget music. Maestro, please.
Ah, yes. Music, maestro, please.
We never did that in our vaudeville act, did we? That song?
No, it's type funny of that we didn't. It's a beautiful song. It would have fit into our act so well.
It would have, yes.
Yeah. The United States Mint, one of the nation's leading producers of fine new money, brings you another dramatic story from the files of the Emergency Ward.
Greetings and welcome. I'm Dr. Gerhard Snutten, a handsome young physician who's not yet established a practice of his own. Instead, I work in the emergency ward of a big city hospital. The emergency ward is a place where human misery may be observed at any hour of the day or night. Take the other evening, for example. I was studying some medical literature during a spare moment when my assistant nurse, Rudehouse, turned to me and said,
"Why are you just sitting there reading the racing form, doctor?"
"Because it keeps me informed about the newest physical conditioning programs for horses. That's vital to my practice of medicine. The horse is man's closest relative in the animal kingdom."
"Well, I'd certainly never heard that. I know we perform experiments on monkeys and even guinea pigs, but it seems as though we'd use horses if they were closely related to us."
"Yes, Rudehouse. You sometimes appall me with your lack of medical knowledge. It should be obvious that a horse would never fit into one of our laboratory cages."
"Hi there. Is this the emergency ward of a big city hospital?"
Yes, it is, and I'm Dr. Gerhard Snutten, a handsome young physician who has not yet established a practice of his own. I might also mention that I disapprove of people who stumble in here and drunkenly knock over my valuable equipment."
"Well, I apologize for the stumbling, Doc, but it wasn't drunkenly. You see, my foot's been asleep all day. Now it's gotten so numb that it just buckles onto me. That's what makes me an emergency case."
"Well, as a layman, you couldn't possibly know the importance of your symptom. So I think I should tell you that you're an emergency case. Circulatory problems can be extremely fatal, so please step over in the corner and remove your clothing at once."
"I take off all my clothes because my foot's asleep?"
"Yes, quickly. And if you're embarrassed because of Nurse Rudehouse, I can assure you, you needn't be. She's quite nearsighted. Now, do as I say."
Okay, I'm going."
"Watch what you're doing, clumsy oaf."
"Doctor, I don't think you should yell at the poor man that way. He already told you that he has no feeling in one foot."
"Nurse Rudehouse, a patient must be taught to conquer his symptoms. That's the first step in effecting a cure through physical therapy."
"But he's not receiving any physical therapy. You haven't even diagnosed his case yet."
"Well, of course I've diagnosed his case. I just don't want to alarm the patient by telling him my conclusion."
"Hey, Doc, look at me."
"I see you, and it's quite a disappointment. But I'll tell you once more, remove all your clothes, not just your shoes and socks."
"But that's all I had to remove, Doc. As soon as I took off the rubber band I'd put around my right ankle this morning to hold up a droopy sock, the numbness in my foot went away."
"Well, as an experienced medical man, I can tell you why that happened. The rubber band was cutting off the circulation to your lower extremity."
"I think it was making my foot go to sleep, too. So, what do I owe you, Doc?"
"Well, you didn't actually break any of the equipment you knocked over, but I certainly wouldn't want to eat those cough drops you scattered all over the floor. It'll cost at least 15, 20 cents to replace them."
"Well, okay, here's a quarter. Keep the change. And much obliged. Goodbye."
"Goodbye." "Well, Nurse Rudehouse, you just witnessed another miracle of modern medicine. A patient who was at death's door only a few moments ago has now walked out of here capable of leading a full, happy life. So you may simply write the entry in your casebook, patient released, cured."
And so the tireless dedication of those who work in the big city hospital again produces its reward. Join us soon when the United States Mint, producer of fine new money, will present more tense drama from the files of the Emergency Ward.
Now more Bob and Ray in Radio New York over WOR New York.
Hello, it's time to pay another of our regular visits to the Bob and Ray Hobby Hut, a special feature conducted by Neil Plummer, editor of Wasting Time magazine. Neil is nationally known as Mr. Hobby himself, and I see he's getting set up over at our other microphone with his special guest for today. So we'll just let you pick it up from there and carry on, Neil.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. I think the gentleman here beside me has a collection that will be the envy of every hobbyist. His name is Carl Dickert. Of course, that immediately rings a bell with all you listeners who collect odd-shaped fruit and vegetables. But for the benefit of the non-hobbyist, I wonder if you'd tell us something about your collection, Carl.
Yes, I'd be happy to, Neil. My collection consists of odd-shaped fruit and vegetables, and I've traveled all over the country to assemble the prize pieces I brought with me today. I'm always reading in the paper about somebody who's grown a Hubbard squash in the shape of an elephant or something like that. So I usually hop the next plane to go dicker with the owner about buying it for my collection.
And then I assume you keep the specimens in these paper sacks that you brought with you.
Yes. There aren't any ready-made albums available for displaying strange items of produce. And buying plane tickets to travel around the country, picking up the stuff, takes a lot of money.
Sure.
So I cut corners by keeping the collection in 238 separate paper sacks. I brought about 20 of the best ones with me today.
Well, it's too bad that there aren't any albums available for what you collect, Carl.
There aren't.
But I see that you have labels neatly pasted on each sack telling what's inside. And where you got it.
Yes. I try to put all that information down while I still remember pertinent details. Like this one here, you can see it identifies the contents of the paper sack as a cluster of 5 carrots, all grown from a single seed and attached to each other at the top. I obtained those in August of 1974 from an elderly gentleman in Minnesota. And here at the bottom it lists the price I paid, $3.25.
Well, it's certainly cheap enough for an unusual specimen like 5 carrots all attached to each other.
Yes. The old man needed money, so he let them go cheap. But, of course, my transportation to Minneapolis from my home in Florida ran almost $400, so I have more invested than you might think.
Yes, I'm sure you do. And I notice another sack here that's labeled cantaloupe in the shape of a dill pickle. Well, now, that's hard to imagine. I wonder if you could remove some of your prized specimens like that from their sacks so we could, you know, describe them for our listeners.
You mean you want me to open the sacks?
Yes, if you don't mind. I don't... See, you have a strip of tape across the top of each one holding it shut, so it shouldn't be too hard to put them back after we've seen them.
No, it won't be hard, so if you're sure that's what you want, okay.
Oh, phew. Oh, boy, that smells terrible.
Yes, I know.
Boy.
That's why I couldn't figure out why you wanted me to open the sacks. Some of this fresh produce is 4 or 5 years old.
Oh,
see, the date on this cantaloupe in the shape of a dill pickle
is
September 14th, 1972.
Get away from me. I don't want to see the date. That stench is really overpowering.
Wow. Yes, that's why I keep the specimens in sacks with the tape across the top that way.
Oh, boy.
Doesn't seem to be any way to preserve odd-shaped fruit and vegetables, so they keep their odd shape.
Well, you know, all you've got there is garbage, actually.
I suppose you could say that, Neil. But of course, I can visualize what each item looked like when it was still fresh. That's why I always take a plane to go and pick up the stuff, so I can see it at least once before it decays. I'll take this one here. It's a tomato that grew up in the shape of a chicken.
Oh, boy, that's awful. Oh, hey, that smells worse than the first one.
Yes.
Oh, boy.
3-year-old tomato that's not refrigerated will tend to do that.
Oh, hey, would you close those sacks and seal them up again, please?
Well, I thought you said you wanted to see the stuff.
I changed my mind now. Will you get all that stuff out of here? Oh, boy,
yes.
What a stench.
Yes, I guess it's really not the kind of a collection I should put on display.
Oh, boy.
So I'll just take it and leave. Goodbye.
Well, Well, that seems to close out another of our informative sessions here in the Hobby Hut. So until next time, this is Neil Clemmer, urging all of you to have a good day and find a good hobby. Now, can we spray something in here to get rid of that?
And now, the American Federation of Sheep Herders, representing 14,000 lonely people just like yourself, brings you another episode of The Gathering Dusk, a heartwarming story of a girl who's reached the conclusion that every dark cloud also has a dark lining. As we look in on the Bessinger household today, Edna is banking the six ball into the side pocket in the downstairs billiard room. It's mid-afternoon, and Sergeant Whitwell, the commander of the Village Police Department's Burglary and Auto Theft Division, is just arriving.
Oh, it's you, Burglary and Auto Theft Division Commander Whitwell. I'm awfully glad you checked with your answering service and got my urgent message.
Well, that wasn't an answering service you talked to, Miss Bessinger. It was the desk sergeant at police headquarters.
Is that a fact? Well, he certainly does have a voice like a machine, all hollow and metallic. Of course, now that I think of it, he never said I had to wait until I heard him beep before I left my message.
No, ma'am, I don't think the day will ever come when we'll have a machine answering the phone at headquarters. We have too many emergencies to deal with.
Well, if you're already well-stocked with emergencies, then I'd certainly advise against getting a cheap phone answering machine that will be going on the fritz all the time. And knowing what a cheapskate your boss is, I'm sure he's got one of those $12 models that's really a toy for children.
Now, Miss Bessinger, I don't know what would make you say a thing like that about our police chief. Surely you're not still angry with him for letting that young man you claimed was your fiancé leave town 30 years ago.
Well, of course I'm still angry. That was a clear case of kidnapping that called for police action. David never would have left town of his own free will. We were planning to be married.
Well, I think it was your talk of marriage that made him leave, Miss Bessinger. When we questioned him at the bus station, he said he'd only taken you out once. And then he dropped the thing when he found out that your brother lived in a tree in your front yard.
Yes, that was during Waldo's nature boy period. He used to let out a Tarzan yell at everybody who came up the front walk. But I don't know why that should have made David decide that he didn't want a person like that for brother-in-law.
Well, I'm not sure whether that's the only reason he decided not to stay in the same town with you and your family. But I hope you didn't call me all the way over here just to reopen the case.
No, certainly not. I assume David's kidnapping wouldn't be in your department, Burglary and Auto Theft Division Commander Whitwell. So I've called on you to do something about the flagrant daylight burglary that's taking place right now across the street at Grandma Wanderman's. Now, just look at the way the crook has piled all of Grandma's precious belongings out in her driveway. Apparently, he's gone to get his truck, and heaven only knows what's become of Grandma.
Well, I think I see her behind that telephone pole nailing up a rummage sale sign. Now, that would tend to make me think that she was the one who piled those things in the driveway, not a burglar. She's just conducting a flea market to get rid of that junk.
By Jupiter, I do believe that's a possibility, Burglary and Auto Theft Division Commander Whitwell. I wondered why a crook would steal things like old percolators and a damaged Pachisi board. But I can see now that there probably isn't even a crime wave in progress. Land sakes, you can't imagine what a worry this takes off my mind. I suddenly feel as if I'm no longer standing in the gathering dusk.
Well, hi, it's time to play Phone Call to Anywhere, and the holder of the lucky ticket on our stage here is with us now, Mr. Edwin Clark, and he's decided to call a friend in Cleveland. You know how we play this game. His party's on the line now, and if Mr. Clark can keep his friend on the phone for at least 3 minutes, his call will be on the house. So here's the phone. Let's go.
Hello, Al. This is Ed.
Hi, Ed. Where are you?
I'm in New York City. I'm calling from New York City. Are you home now, Al?
I picked up the phone, didn't I? I must be home.
Well, look around and make sure.
I don't have to look around. I'm home. I can see my wife and kids.
Well, I'm here in New York City, Al.
Well, I'm in Cleveland, my home.
Where?
Where what?
Where's your home now?
Oh, I'm in the living room, Ed.
Oh, really? Yeah, I see. Al, the last time I talked to you in Cleveland, you told me you were going to move, did you?
No, I'm still living in the same place here, my old home in Cleveland.
I see. Al, did I ever show you my wristwatch?
Lots of times.
Well, you should see it now.
Oh, I can't, Ed. I'm in Cleveland.
Well, that's too bad, Al, because the watch looks altogether different now. It's on Eastern Standard Time.
Well, I'll take a look at it when you get back to Cleveland.
All right. But if I forget to show it to you when I get back, you remind me, won't you, Al?
Well, if I remember, I will.
Look, Al, I'll tell you what. I may forget to show you the watch, and you may forget to remind me. So, suppose I mail you the watch, and then when I visit you, I can pick it up and show it to you.
Well, if I got your watch in the mail, you wouldn't have to show it to me. I could open the package, and I could take a look at it then, right on the spot.
I see. Well, then, this is what we'll do. I'd like to be around personally to show you the watch, so I'll mail it to you, and when the postman delivers it, don't open the package. How's that?
Well, if I can't open the package, Ed, you might as well not send it at all. You can wear it and show it to me when you get back to Cleveland.
That sounds like a lot of trouble, Al.
18 seconds to go, sir.
Say, I'd like to talk to your little boy, Al. I'd like to say hello to him.
Oh, sure. He's right here. Hey, Ronnie, say hello to your Uncle Eddie.
Hello, Uncle Eddie. You know what I learned today?
7 seconds to go, sir. Keep him on the phone.
What you learned today, Ronnie?
I learned to hang up the phone, Uncle Eddie.
Oh, sorry, Mr. Clark. You missed by 1 second. But you won't go away empty-handed, sir. Here's a card with our address on it, and when you get back to Cleveland, you can send us the money for the phone bill you just ran up. Thanks for being here and helping us play Phone Call to Anywhere. Congratulations.
Makers of Einbinder the Fly Paper, a name you've gradually grown to trust over the course of 3 generations, invite you to ride with the man of Squad Car 119.
My name is Sam Finch. Me and my partner, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr., are the unsung heroes of the police force. We ride a prowl car at night. Sometimes we keep the doors locked from the inside, other times we don't. Either way, we're always on the lookout for trouble. The other evening, it was cloudy in Los Angeles. We were carrying out our assignments anyway when my partner, Ralph R. Kruger, Jr., turned to me and said...
Care for a shot of nasal spray, Sam?
No, I don't think so. Thanks all the same.
It'll do wonders for your sinus passages, Sam. I felt like I was getting a cold a couple of hours ago, but now the spray's almost cleared it up.
I'm glad to hear that, Ralph R. Jr. But I don't feel a cold coming on, so I guess I don't need any nasal spray to cure it.
Well, this stuff doesn't claim to cure a cold, Sam. The government won't let you make a claim like that. It just says here on the side of the bottle that it's for the relief of symptoms.
I don't have any symptoms, Ralph R. Jr.
Well, that's probably just because you don't feel a cold coming on, Sam. So you ought to use this spray. It doesn't even claim to cure a cold.
Yeah, I know. It can't do that. It's not...
Calling Car 119. Car 119. Pursue a fugitive fleeing northward on foot in the 2200 block of Montana. That's a fugitive fleeing north at 2200 Montana.
Fugitive 2200 Montana, huh?
That's us, Sam. Let's roll.
I guess we'll have to, Ralph R. Jr. I was sure hoping we wouldn't have to chase any fugitives on foot tonight. I got a date after we get off work, and this is my best suit I'm wearing.
That's a shame, Sam. Looks like it's going to rain, too. And I don't want to get out of the car if it's raining. Not when I may have a cold coming on.
I was sure counting on you to be the one who gets out of the car if it starts raining, Ralph R. Jr. The suit's 100% rayon. Looks terrible when it gets wet.
That's a shame, Sam. Normally, I don't mind being the one who gets out of the car when it's raining, but tonight I've got this cold coming on.
Yeah, I was really counting on you. First date I've had with this girl. She'll think I wear a mussed-up suit all the time if I get to her place looking mussed.
That's a shame, Sam. I'd sure be glad to help if I didn't have this cold coming on, you know?
I was really counting on you. I would have waited until we got off work to change into my good suit, but I thought I could count on you.
That's a shame, Sam.
See, it looks all messed up if I wear...
Car 119. Car 119. Disregard that call to pursue a fugitive fleeing northward on foot in the 2200 block of Montana. The case has been handled by the men of Squad Car 43. The suspect has been apprehended, booked, and brought to trial. In 1 minute, the results of that trial.
While we wait to hear the outcome of today's exciting case, here's a tip for budget-minded housewives from the makers of Einbinder Flypaper. Ladies, we know how the recession has forced you to stop buying many luxury items you once provided for your family, but don't make the common mistake of eliminating flypaper from your shopping list. In the long run, you can only lose money by letting insects eat your pastry goods before you can feed them to your family. So look upon flypaper as what it really is, your insurance against further economic loss. And be sure to ask for genuine Einbinder, the flypaper you've gradually grown to trust over the course of three generations.
That fugitive fleeing northward on foot in the 2200 block of Montana was convicted on two counts of fleeing northward on foot. Under California law, fleeing northward is a felony, and being on foot is a misdemeanor, each punishable by imprisonment in a state correctional institution at Soledad.
And so another desperate criminal is brought to justice thanks to the unsung heroes of the police force, the men who ride the squad cars at night.
Dan, good night and see you tomorrow. And I guess that does it for Bob and Ray for today.
Don't forget the WOR Radio Mystery Theater, which follows the Fulton Lewis News commentary next. Tonight's story is called Crime Casts a Shadow. It stars Evie Juster and William Redfield.
Okay, we'll see you tomorrow at 4:15. Until then, Ray Goulding reminding you to write if you get worried.
Bob Elliott reminding you to hang by your thumbs.
And this is WOR New York, an RKO General Station.